Okay, Proof of Angels will take your stories and your questions. Fascinating stuff when we come back. Okay, welcome back to Coast with our two special guests, of course, Ptolemy Tompkins and Tyler Bedos, authors of Proof of Angels. Ptolemy has several other books, including, of course, the Modern Book of the Dead, The Divine Life of Animals as well. So, Ptolemy, we're talking about the percentage of people who believe in angels. How big is that?
Well, you know, the number changes around, but I seem to run into 68% a lot. I think the number is slightly lower in England, but still very high. And I think, as is in keeping with our reputation as an extremely spiritual country, we have a little higher than they have. But the number is always a high number. A tremendous amount of people believe in angels.
And Tyler, how has this episode changed your life?
Well, I was in such a dark spot, starting to doubt kind of my faith in things. And so this incident really, to hear this angel, it really changed my life. It changed me from seeing negative to seeing positive and knowing that God has a plan for us, and that was huge for me.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to Ron in Baker, Florida. Hey, Ron, thanks for calling. Go ahead with a question or story.
I got a little story for y'all.
All right.
Glad to finally get through and talk to you.
Super.
Back in 1995, I live here in the Florida Panhandle, and I was, as you might say, way down on my luck. I was homeless, walking around homeless in my own hometown with all my family and friends mad at me for some reason or another. Walking up the highway one August day, very hot, looking along, wondering why, and out of nowhere, a man is on the side of the road with me in the ditch laying there with a backpack slung over his shoulder, laying in the ditch reading a magazine. I said, howdy, he's kind of surprised me. I hadn't seen him walking up on him, really, like he came out of nowhere. He said, hey, how you doing? I said, man, it's hard out here on the road, isn't it? He said, oh, it's not that bad. He started telling me a story about where he had been, the place over in Mississippi, and the ministry he had been to, and told me that if I hadn't had anything going on in my life, I might need to go there and get things going on that could help me. And I said, no way. If I go into Jackson, Mississippi in August, I've done that. Not going to do that again. So he says, well, you know, you might want to think about it. He says, by the way, is there a store I can get some water, some toilet paper and stuff? I said, sure. He said, will you walk with me? I said, yeah, just about a half mile down the road. This poor fella couldn't hardly walk. His feet was blistered so bad, he hobbled. At the time, I weighed over 500 pounds, and I could walk faster than he could.
Jeez.
Well, we walked to the store. He got his supplies, came back outside, says, now, you need to promise me that you'll go to Jackson, Mississippi, to this place I've told you of. I said, sir, I just can't promise you. He said, look, now, will you pray with me? I said, sure. So we held hands and prayed. And when he finished the prayer, he looked in my eyes and said, my birthday is May 21st, 1959. Well, that's my birthday. So he got my attention right there.
Uh-huh.
And I said, yeah, I can get there. I know where I can get the money and go. He said, all right, then you do that. He walked away hobbling, barely could walk. I went in the store, made him a call, came right back out in about 2 minutes, walked to the highway, first car by, seen me, stopped, asked if I need a ride. I said, I sure do. And right up the road, there's going to be a guy with a backpack. We'll be needing to pick him up as well. Never saw him again.
Gone.
In the space of 5 minutes, he disappeared.
Huh.
All right, so I get to Jackson, Mississippi to the place. I go out to the second day I'm there, I'm coming in from hunting a job. Well, guess who's sitting at the dinner table when I get there?
No, that guy.
And I don't know where he came from, but I never seen him again. Now, you tell me if I've entertained angels unaware.
That's amazing. Like, and he recognized you, no doubt, right?
No doubt he recognized me. And like he said, I said, where have you been? He said, well, I've sent a few other people to a couple of other missions along the way from Georgia, where he was allegedly headed to his uncle's house. But it's just a kind of a far-out story, and it really helped me along in my course of life, so I just want to let somebody know about it.
I love that story. Tell me, these are stories that just last forever, aren't they?
Absolutely, and that's a perfect Angels on Earth story. You ought to send it in. I mean, it's classic. Somebody shows up, they don't seem to be quite belonging where they are, but there they are. They give you a piece of information that you need, and the next thing you know, they're somewhere else. It's just, that's a classic. Wonderful.
Earlier, we talked about the possibility of the believers and the non-believers. But in this particular case, with these kinds of interventions, how do we know that it's not something that we've created in our own heads, in our own minds? You know, that little voice that tells you, don't go through that intersection. You could get hit. Maybe there's a mechanism within us as humans. What do you think?
Well, I think in the case of the story we just heard, that gentleman sounds like he's got his wits about him. And he, you know, when you ask him if this guy was real, he'll tell you yes. And it's a perfect example of a situation where, you know, you can't bring it into the laboratory and analyze it. Stories like this tend to get classified as anecdotal. And anecdotal is sort of tends to be a word of dismissal in the scientific community. It's like, oh, well, it's a story, you know. What are you going to do with a story? Well, if this kind of story happens to an extraordinary amount of people, then some people, and some scientists too, say you have to start paying attention to it. If something that doesn't quite fit the picture you have keeps happening, and you keep ignoring it, mm-hmm. you're missing out on an aspect of reality which is giving you hints of itself. I mean, science is full of stories of, you know, for some reason we did the experiment again and there's this little glitch and, oh, well, let's just ignore it. And then somebody says, well, let's not ignore it. Let's figure out what that glitch is. And the glitch turns out to, you know, unveil a whole other aspect of reality that the experimenters were missing because they weren't paying attention to it. And anecdotal evidence, stories told by people, can either be explained by the fact that people are in general delusional and they make stuff up all the time to make themselves feel better, or by what I think is the better explanation, many people see stuff that there's no logical explanation for. It happens all the time. Therefore, there just might be something to it that we don't understand. It doesn't fit the current parameters of our definition of reality.
And Tyler, in your case, is it happening again more often, or was it this one-time episode? I mean, are you seeing more angelic interventions?
Yeah, I think I've opened my eyes to, you know, like I said, I was such in a dark spot that I think now with you know, what happened to me, it's really made me open my eyes to notice things like this that happen. And I think, like Ptolemy said, if you really see the entire picture of what, you know, what I feel this world's about and what the afterlife, I think this, it happens all the time. It happens like the individual that called just a few minutes ago. It's just, it happens to all of us if we just open our eyes and really look for it. Those things are out there.
Let's go to Sal in North Homestead, Ohio. Hi, Sal. Thanks for calling. Good morning to you.
Hello, George. When I was remember hearing that on the news, and my first gut feeling was it was the Virgin Mary, because you know, I don't have any reason not to believe it could have been an angel.
Right.
But the reason why I think it was the Virgin Mary, one reason is because I'm Catholic, and another reason is we always pray to her for the welfare of the children.
Right.
And all the angels that I'm familiar with were all males, you know, like Michael the Archangel, mm-hmm. Gabriel, you know, those were all male.
Sure.
And I wondered if my question is did any church leaders comment on this miracle? Because it was a miracle, but I didn't hear nothing on the news of any church leaders like the Pope or, you know, some other religions. They have church leaders too.
I'm not aware of that. Tyler, are you?
I'm not. I'm not aware of any specific religious leader that's commented on that at all.
You would think they would have. Somebody would have said, it's a miracle.
Right. I have my own, I'm of the Mormon faith, so I've had several, you know, people within that church and stuff that has said, you know, it's definitely divine intervention. But no, I've never had a specific church leader that said that.
Ptolemy, do you remember the case where there was a woman involved in a car crash on the road, and a priest who showed up, disappeared, got her out of the crashed vehicle? Remember that?
Well, I'm wondering if this is the one that occurred more or less around the time that Tyler's story did. There was a big story. I was just a couple of weeks into the book, and there was a big story about a car crash and an individual, a man who showed up, and I can't remember if he was a priest, but it sounds like the same story.
Yeah, this guy was a priest.
This is something that happened last year, right?
A year, year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. You know, it's difficult. One of the reasons it's difficult writing about this stuff is because we live in such a plurality of religions, and even Christianity is so splintered. And when somebody has an experience like this, they tend to experience it within the garments, as it were, of that particular faith. And that's one of the reasons that people who don't believe in this sort of thing dismiss it, because if a Catholic sees somebody, you know, a woman on the road or whatever, it's the Virgin Mary, but they say, oh, well, you know, if you were in India, that woman might have been Kali or Sita or who knows what else. And this is a domain that we just don't understand. I think the fact that people tend to see beings like this in the guise of their faith does not take away from the reality of the event. What it tells us is that we tend to perceive in the language of our belief system, but that does not take away from the reality of what has been experienced. Was that voice the Virgin Mary? Well, many people would say it was the ghost. One person said it was the ghost of Jennifer's mom, who had passed on a few years before.
And that could be. That's possible.
That could be. And what one has to do is just, I think, maintain respect for the different faith traditions, understand that these occurrences often appear in the guise of the faith tradition of the person in question, and not take that fact as one that renders these stories null and void. It just means that we have a lot more to learn about what perception, the way we perceive the world, and how our inner understanding of the world affects that perception. The reality remains.
Let's go to Joe in the Bronx now. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Joy?
Good.
I'd like to ask your guest if there are any accounts of any evidence of an angelic visitation being left behind, like a physical souvenir of sorts.
Ptolemy, I'm going to let you take that. Anything left behind?
That is an interesting question, and I think that the place where one finds, again, this is kind of a extension of the subject we were just talking about, because you know, Catholicism is heavy on relics. Catholicism is likes the material world, and it likes things you can hold in your hand. And I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I, you know, in terms of the tradition of saints visiting people, stuff like that, especially in Europe, you'll have objects that were, you know, claimed to have been given to people by an apparition. Although I cannot give you, you need rosemary on to.
Yeah.
You know, come exactly. up with the exact specific.
I think what they leave behind are incredible witness stories.
Yeah, or change situations, something like that. And, you know, I'm sorry I can't answer the question specifically. I have a feeling if given a little time to root around, I bet I could find you some. But no specific ones come to mind, but I would not be remotely surprised.
Okay, let's go to Catherine now in Belmont, California. Hi, Catherine, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking
sure.
my call.
Absolutely.
Well, I have a story that about 4 years ago, I made a pilgrimage. I'm Catholic. I made a pilgrimage to Medjugorje, Croatia, which is an apparition site where the Mother of God is appearing.
Yep.
And the day after my trip ended, I made my way to Dubrovnik, and I took just a tour group to an island off the coast of Dubrovnik, and the group split up for a couple hours in the afternoon, and we were around a little lake that fed into the Adriatic, and I was alone, you know, separated from the group, and I started swimming laps back and forth in this little lake, and I thought, well, there's no current, so it's okay, but as I progressed swimming, it was about 3:30 in the afternoon, and there was a current now that wasn't there when I started, and I had drifted. I was doing a backstroke, and I was wondering, why is it taking me so long to get back to shore? And I turned around, and I had drifted. There was a current that wasn't there when I started. So I panicked, and I tried to get back, you know, beat the current once, twice, nothing. You couldn't beat the current. And I started panicking, and my heart was pounding in my throat, and I thought, oh, God, I could drown. And I thought, I'm going to have to try one more time, and if I don't beat the current, I'm going to have to start screaming and see if the people that I drifted away from could hear me from shore. And I went horizontal, you know, to the water to try with all my might to beat the current. And then it was like I completely blacked out. It was like a light switch. It just went black. And I had no perception of time, but it felt like an instant later. I literally woke up. I was vertical, like just bobbing, like someone had plopped me up several yards up and over on the other side of the current towards the shore. And I just opened my eyes, and I was like, what the heck happened? I did not get here of my own accord. Hmm. And so I had adrenaline rush, and I just swam to shore. And I was so flustered and so embarrassed that I'd done that. You know, I'd taken a risk like that, that I put it out of my mind, and I met back up with the group, and we took the ferry boat back to town. And the next day, it hit me. And I'm walking around town. I'm like, wait a minute. What happened? And I prayed that I knew it was an intervention, a miraculous intervention. And I prayed to the Blessed Mother. I said, could you please let me know in a dream or a prayer in the next day or so who I can thank for this? And that night, I had a very vivid waking dream, lucid dream. I was standing in like a swirling type of cloud, and there was this young man, maybe in his mid-20s, blonde hair, blue eyes, rosy cheeks. He looked very angelic, and he was holding my forearms, and he was looking lovingly in my eyes, and he was speaking words to me, and I was speaking with him, and I could hear the vibration of him speaking in my ear, like there was a microphone in my ear. His words were just resonating in me, and he said very softly, I am the angel who accompanies people to heaven at the time of their death.
See? How about that? Someone who takes you to the other side. On our next Coast to Coast program, John Perkins joins us to talk about new confessions of an economic hitman. And then Raymond Grace joins us, the dowser. So fascinating program for us. And then we're going to come back in a moment and take final phone calls as we talk about proof of angels. Welcome back to our final segment. Ptolemy Tompkins with us, author of Proof of Angels. And Ptolemy, where do you get the book? Available all over the place?
Well, pleasantly, it's not available on Amazon right now because they sold out. So I'm
good.
Taking that as good news. But, yeah, you get it Barnes & Noble, Amazon, places like that. Actually, Target and Walmart, too, as far as I've been given to understand.
Super. We're going to take your final calls here in a second. What have you learned about all of this? I mean, were you always a believer before this?
Well, let me try to give an honest answer to that question. I started out, and I think this is a journey a lot of us take. I started out as a kid taking the supernatural world for granted. And it's something that happens to a lot of kids around the age of 7 or 8, where they start to lose touch with a world that, you know, for the first years of their lives, they felt very comfortable with. It recedes, and it's part of growth. And, you know, when you're in elementary school, at least in my experience, that was the time when I felt sort of furthest away from it. I felt that I'd sort of fallen out of that immediate sense of contact with a larger world. And as I got older, the memory of that world stayed in my mind. I remember telling myself as a kid, don't forget about this place. Don't forget about this thing. I could feel it going away. I said, you know, I sort of promised myself that I would not ever get to a point where I would say, this wasn't real. And I remained interested in that throughout my adulthood. And when I started writing books in my 20s, I just kind of realized that this is what I wanted to write about. I knew I wanted to be a writer pretty early on. And this sort of turned into my subject. I realized it was the thing that I didn't get tired of talking about, that I didn't get tired of reading about, that I didn't get tired of wanting to learn more about and get a handle on, so I could speak with some confidence about it. And, you know, in a nutshell, it's just that idea that, you know, as I said earlier, Black Elk said better than anybody else when he called it the world behind the world, the larger world that's going on within which our experience takes place.
That may be the best definition for what this is all about.
It's the one I like. It's always stuck with me. I mean, it's haunting, and it just, to me, it feels right.
Let's take final calls. Let's go to Chris in Mississippi to get things started. Chris, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George. I just want to tell you how angels are real, because in my first encounter with angels, it was in the early 70s, and it was like I always slept on the top bunk of my brother's. We had bunk beds. We didn't have any air conditions, but it was real hot, and it was in Mississippi. And
oh, yeah.
For some reason, I went and slept on the couch in the living room that night, and I was laying there, and all of a sudden I rolled over. I mean, I was asleep, and I rolled over and I looked, and it was like three angels. They had almost like feminine and male characteristics with a glow around them, which I've kind of researched it now, and they call it the Shekinagoria, the glow. It's almost like a fog. And I rolled back over and thought, wow, that was weird. And then I don't know how much time passed, but I rolled over again and saw them again, the three faces, and they were just looking at me. And then I looked down at the couch, and I realized I was about maybe 3 feet off the couch, laying like they were holding me up off the couch, horizontal, you know, to the couch, but yeah. I was up in the air. And I rolled back over and said, man, this is going to be a really strange dream. And then I'm not so sure how much more time passed. But the next thing I know, I'm standing up in the floor. I never got up off the couch, you know, or kind of was groggy and woke up. I was just standing in the floor, and I was looking down at this little fan, you know, portable fan, and it was on fire, and the wall was on fire, and there was all this black smoke in the house. So I ran and got my mom up and my sister and my brother, and we all ran outside. And I didn't tell my mom for like 2 weeks, but when I told her, you know, she's like, why didn't you tell me, you know, there was angels that saved us? And that was just the first encounter, but I'd have to be a guest on the show to tell you the rest of them, but it'd take too much time. I know you got other callers, but they're real, and they interact with us all the time, and they keep people, you know, there's so many miracles happen every day, like cars passing each other on the highway and not hitting each other. It's just, you know.
Yeah, strange things.
And the more, that's what I tell people. A friend of mine said, well, I wish I could see things like that. And I said, no, God knew that I was just too stupid to catch on unless it's shown. You know what I'm saying? I need to be shown. And but that's what I tell other people, that I didn't learn about God academically by reading the Bible and then saying, oh, I'm going to make the world fit what I read. I've seen it on the streets and stuff. And
well, that's the place to see it. Chris, thanks for the story. On the streets, I wonder how many people telling me, have witnessed things, and we just don't know about it.
You know, there's no getting a number because some people don't want to tell their story. And I love Chris's story because for a number of reasons, I love I love it when somebody who just sounds like a regular guy, like he does, tells you a story that is not regular. You know, it's so wonderful. You know, he doesn't sound like some airy-fairy, new-agey, pixie dust person who glides about. He sounds like a pretty
a regular guy. A real human being.
Yeah. And he also mentioned that he didn't initially tell, I believe it was his mom, mm-hmm. because, well, why wouldn't he tell her initially? Because it was kind of too much to tell. Like, you stop and you wonder, like Tyler did on the bridge, like, am I going to tell anybody about this? Because you know how crazy it was, and yet it wasn't crazy because it happened.
Are some people,
a lot of people keep mum about it, so I think there's no real number we could get, because I think a lot of people just, they value it, they put it away, they remember it, but they don't tell other people.
Are they embarrassed by it?
Sometimes they're embarrassed by it, and sometimes it has such a value for them that they feel they fear cheapening it by bringing it out into the air. There's a organization over in England that collects this kind of stuff, published a number of books. The it was originally called the Religious Experience Research Unit. And many of these stories that they collected just from regular people, the last line of the story is, I never told anybody this before. You know, they just saw the ad in the paper to submit stories like this, and they said, okay, I'm going to tell somebody. But they told nobody before. They hadn't told their husbands or their wives or their kids or anybody, because it's like this precious thing that you kind of just want to wrap up, put in your wallet, and just keep there because it means so much.
Let's go to Wayne in Lakewood, Washington, west of the Rockies. Wayne, go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen and Hi. George. And I know this is one of Art's favorite subjects, along with Proof of the Human Soul. And I know on the Coast to Coast website, there used to be a go-to for Proof of the Human Soul. I think it was by Dr. McDonald. And that was a loss of weight when a person died.
Mm-hmm. Don't know if a little bit. That. A few little grams or something like that.
Right. Exactly. This was back in March, or April, rather, end of April, 1966. I'd just gotten out of the Air Force. I'd was in the hospital in the Air Force, had read my New Testament completely through within a week's time towards that end, and really felt God talking to me, wanting him to serve me, and called a mutual friend from the church I'd gone to say, let's go up in the mountains and, you know, have a retreat and have a visit. And we planned to do this, and he canceled out on me in the last moment, so I ended up going up alone. And I don't think if I'd gone up with him, this would have happened, actually. But I went up to Mount Constance, up on Lake Constance, up on Mount Constance in the Olympics, and it was a 7-mile climb uphill, very strenuous to get up there. Met one couple on the way up, and they gave me a fish, and I put it in my knapsack for dinner. Got up there, and it was getting pretty late already. It tied up my knapsack to the tree. It was very cold. There was ice all around, ice on the lake. But there was a spot around a tree about 30 feet in diameter that it was clear ground. Even though I had a down bag with me, it was light down. So I got into my sleeping bag because it was starting to get dark with all my clothes and shoes and everything on.
Freezing and shivering, no doubt.
Absolutely. And all of a sudden, there was 20 to 30 mountain sheep around me. Wild mountain sheep that were just starting to lose their hair. This is really rough, gruffy looking.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, they would be quiet for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden they'd start making noise and running around. And so I'd stick my head out and yell, you know, and then they'd kind of scoot off a little bit in the distance, and then they'd come back around and start going around and milling around me. That happened all night. It had kept me awake all night. So by the time of daybreak, I woke up, you know, staggering from no sleep, threw my duffel bag together and stuff together and got my knapsack and headed down the mountain, got down to my car, which is only about 3 miles down the rough road to the highway, got down to the highway, started driving, and I was so tired, I fell asleep at the steering wheel, started hitting the bumps. You know, the first year they had bumps on the highway, and that woke me up. Woke me up just enough to say, Jesus, you're going to have to help me get home. And within a minute, there were two men on the freeway that I picked up, and they kept me awake talking to me all the way into Olympia, about 30 miles away. And I said, we're going to let you guys out. And I said, they said, well, right here would be a good spot. And it wasn't at an exit or anything. It was kind of on the farmland dairy flats. And I'm like, okay. You know, so I let them out and looked out, and there's hardly any traffic. So I pulled out, started to pull away, turned around to wave goodbye.
Gone. Ha. Angels taking
classic.
Off like that.
Totally classic.
These angels, Ptolemy, they will come to you in any form, won't they?
They come in animal form, sure. I mean, you got angel dogs, angel cats, angel dolphins. And, it's the larger world speaking to us in the language of other beings. And what's the nature of those beings? Like, who were those two guys on the highway? We don't know exactly, but oftentimes when people have encounters with angels, you know, they'll touch them, shake hands, you know. I'm sure when those guys got in the car, the springs of the seat creaked when they got in and sat down. You know, real.
Yeah. One of your books, The Divine Life of Animals, do you touch on that?
I do a little bit because in our world, you know, there's an absence of community in our world to a large degree, especially with the elderly. And you have oftentimes a situation where an animal is the only friend an older person has. And when that animal dies, it's as painful to them as a human being who
sure is
about dying. And those animals will return or make themselves known in particular ways. They'll appear in a dream, stuff like that. And it's the kind of thing where people who aren't up for this kind of thing will say sounds silly, but it happens all the time, and it means a great deal to the people who have these experiences, and they aren't interested in being told that it was just a dream or it's just your grief or whatever.
Let's go to Stephen in Kentucky now. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, how are you doing, George?
Okay, thank you.
Now, a short story. 22 years ago yesterday, I was in a horrific automobile accident, and I died in the ditch line on the side of the road and had an out-of-body experience. And two angels, one on each side, touched my shoulder and told me that my work was not done here, and just slowly pushed me down. And long story short, I ended up in Louisville, Kentucky in the intensive care unit in a coma for 2 weeks. And as I came out of the coma, one of the most beautiful Shirley Temple Locks redheaded woman was sitting there holding my hand, and had no clue who this lady was. And, of course, no way to vocalize anything from all of the tubes and everything that was down my throat and in my body and things. And, you know, she told me, you're going to be fine. You're going to be okay. And, of course, she was talking. I could hear her, but her mouth wasn't moving. And she said, I'm going to get someone, and I'll be right back. So a few days later, when they had taken the tubes out and things, then I asked all the nurses and all of the hospital staff, I mean, just everything, trying to find this lady, and just wanted to thank her. And, you know, she was such a great comfort at the time that happened. And to this day, nobody knows who she was or anything. And in my mind, she has always been an angel. And I just wanted to share that with the listeners tonight.
I love it.
Wonderful.
Millions of stories like that.
Yeah, I tell you, highways and hospital wards.
Huge. Where people so could many. Get hit and die, or they die in hospitals. The angels seem to accumulate and congregate around death.
Or just situations of peril or extreme doubt and depression, where somebody is sort of hit rock bottom. Absolutely. Yeah, I've always been intrigued by the fact that if you ask a nurse or an orderly who's worked at a hospital for a long time if they have any interesting stories to relate, when do you not get an answer? You know, you almost always get several incredible stories of patients saying, who was that lady who was just in the room with me?
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
And what lady?
All the time.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, we just need to learn what to do with it. I think step one of learning what to do with it is realizing it's serious, treating it with respect.
It is truly remarkable when it happens and plays out.
Well, the people, I mean, listen to these people who've called in. I mean,
I know, this is, and there's more on hold. We're out of time, but these stories are amazing. But Ptolemy, thanks again for being on the program. It's always great having you on.
I loved it. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care of yourself. It's called Proof of Angels. Just amazing, amazing work. Just amazing stories. We've all been through it. We've all been through it. I'll on open lines, I'll talk about one of my angelic stories when I was a little boy, saved by an angelic fireman. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.